Money Radio, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. It is a pleasure to welcome Daniel Eisenberg, an entrepreneur, professor, investor, speaker, policy advisor, founding executive director of the Babson Entrepreneurship Ecosystem Project, and an adjunct professor at Columbia Business School. Mr. Eisenberg also taught for several years at Harvard Business School, and he's published dozens of cases on entrepreneurial ventures around the world. He's also the author of a new book, Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. Daniel, thank you for doing my biography.
Thank you very much, Sinclair. A lot of people have said similar things.
I'm sure they have. You should actually, you know, make a cardboard cutout, or maybe just T-shirts.
I actually do have T-shirts.
Well, there you go. Actually, Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. The subtitle is How Contrarian Entrepreneurs Create and Capture Extraordinary Value. You're looking at entrepreneurs in this book, and not just regular entrepreneurs, but contrarian entrepreneurs. So let's start with that concept of who really is an entrepreneur.
Well, I think anybody who actually creates and captures extraordinary value is an entrepreneur by definition. But what I claim in the book through dozens of examples, and then a little bit of conceptual argument as well, is in order to do that, you almost always have to be contrarian. And what that means is you have to go against the market. You have to do things that other people think are not worth doing, hence the title, Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. Only in retrospect do we say, oh, that 140 characters, microblogging, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But when they first started doing it, no one could understand exactly what the purpose was. And hence the title. So that's the experience of the large majority of entrepreneurs, vast majority of entrepreneurs whom I've met. When they are entrepreneuring, they feel that the world sees them as doing something not worth doing.
So how is it that someone comes to recognize something that the rest of the world is looking at as worthless or impossible or stupid? How do they look at that and come up with the idea that that's something that the market has overlooked and I recognize value in it? What is that tripping point there that leads them to that realization?
Well, first of all, that's the $64,000 question. And if we had a real pat answer to it, we'd all be wealthy. But the truth of the matter is, first of all, entrepreneurs have a lot of false starts. The ones that end up being successful, a lot of times they get off on the wrong track early on, and it's not exactly trial and error. There's a process of learning and making mistakes. That's on the one hand. But on the other hand, a lot of times the entrepreneur has something, whether it's information, such as technology, or whether it's knowledge or skill, or whether it's some asset that other people don't have that allows that person to see the value in a situation that other people see as valueless. So if I have a string of patents, let's say, for example, or a know-how how to develop or design something, I may see a problem that I can solve and you can't. That's the impossible part. So I can convert that into value.
Now,
and I can give you lots of examples. The book is rife with them.
Yes, the book is rife with them, and there are some really intriguing examples. But let's get back to the idea of who is an entrepreneur. You mentioned some expertise. Does an entrepreneur have to be an expert in the field?
Well, the answer is no, they don't have to be. They don't have to be anything, probably, except for very, very persistent and hardworking. But other than that, there are lots of examples of people who are successful in building extraordinary value, creating it, and without knowing anything going into the problem. They sense a problem. They don't know what the solution is. They haven't been experienced at it. And they find a different way of solving it that's been solved before. Now, having said that, I don't want to make it sound that ignorance is a value. These people who start off not as experts very quickly learn as much as can be learned about a given topic. So, for example, we have Abhi Shah, in my book, who founded Clutch Group. It's a legal process outsourcing company, global. He's not a lawyer, but he has an organization which hires employs approximately 400 lawyers today, the largest LPO in the world. But he's never spent a day in court in his life.
And still runs what might be considered one of the largest law firms around.
I don't know if it's one of the largest. In its field, it's certainly the largest. And he learned a lot about legal practice, but he started off not as an expert. It turns out about half of the examples in the book follow a similar kind of path. And then about half of them, again, there are many examples of people who really do know a lot about a given industry, and that's what allows them to see an opportunity where others don't see it. It's just not necessary.
And one example of that might be I probably would mess up the name, so I'll allow you to say it, but you'll know who I'm referring to, the Japanese banker.
Exactly, with a 30-plus year career in every conceivable function within the banking profession, set off on his own at the age of 53 to create Microfinance International, based on his understanding of a particular slice of the market that nobody was paying attention to and, in fact, saw it as very problematic. And he built a business around that.
And built it in, started in Mexico, correct?
Well, it was global. It is Washington, D.C., and also Latin America, a few countries in Latin America, including Mexico.
But really recognized, in part, a need that existed there. And that was part of his trick, I think. Recognized this pressing poverty that he saw in Mexico while working for, I think it was Bank of Tokyo, and decided that was something he had to address.
He combined a few different markets, and that was led the opportunity. On the one hand, there's a huge population of unbanked people in the United States. It's could be close to 100 million by now. Let's say 60 to 100 million people that are unbanked. And on the one hand, and a lot of them are sending remittances back home to other countries. And he combined those two factors, including some social motivations as well as providing dignified services to the unbanked. And he built that into an opportunity.
So innovation in and of itself, you don't have to invent the next great mousetrap or the next great software. And a lot of entrepreneurs find value in something that's basically been done before. And there are several examples of that, the multiplex cinemas in Mexico City and the generic drug manufacturer out of Iceland, right?
Well, that's exactly right. We get a little bit confused. We tend to conflate the word innovation and entrepreneurship, and we think if something's innovative, then it's entrepreneurial and vice versa. Turns out that there are a lot of examples of very successful ventures in the world that are more or less copycats. And the Cinemex example that you gave is a good one, where three Harvard Business School alums went off to, two of them went back home to Mexico City, and founded a chain of multi-screen cinemas using a model that they took from the United States and basically applied in whole cloth to Mexico City.
They did not invent the multiplex cinema. They did not come up with anything particularly new other than putting it in Mexico City.
That's right. And not any more than Robert Westman invented the generic pharmaceuticals that he sold throughout the world and built the fifth, now it's today the third largest generic pharmaceutical company in the world. And it's pretty hard to argue that that's not entrepreneurship just because it wasn't innovative. It created a lot of value for his shareholders, for himself, and for his customers as well, and also for society because, you know, generic drugs, they force down the price of health care for people around the world.
And one of the points you make as well on who is an entrepreneur, typically not a young person, but more typically someone who's a little bit older.
You know, we tend to glorify the lack of experience, and it's true. There are many examples of young people becoming entrepreneurs, but that doesn't mean that A, if you're a little bit older, that you can't be, and B, that if you're younger, that you have some kind of advantage. There's a big plus in experience and wisdom and maturity of judgment and so on. And I think we've gone a little bit overboard in glorifying the passion, so to speak, of youth. I have nothing against it, even though it's receding very fast from my view, personally. But it's not at all a prerequisite for being a successful entrepreneur. Look at Arianna Huffington.
Yeah. Or Ray Kroc or Harlan Sanders or on and on and on. And there's a lot of data that's come out recently showing that the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurs is in the 55 plus age range. Maybe part of that goes to something that you brought up, dealing with that argument about risk taking in relationship to entrepreneurship. And whether it is really taking risk or whether entrepreneurship is more about understanding and mitigating risk.
Well, I think it's about risk management, because I think it's hard to claim that there is no risk in entrepreneurship. Of course, there's financial risk and there's reputational risk of failure and so on. So it is risky business, like climbing a mountain is risky. But once you start off climbing the mountain, you don't forget to take your ropes and your crampons and your safety gear with you. So it's about optimizing the risk so that you can safely do something that other people don't do very often. That, I think, characterizes the entrepreneur. A number of people think that the common perception is that entrepreneurs are a little bit like gamblers. And there's been a backlash to that, where people say, no, entrepreneurs really, they don't like to take risk at all. And I think neither viewpoint quite captures it.
And there is a big difference between someone who works on their own, perhaps a sole proprietor, and someone who is an entrepreneur. What is that difference in your way of thinking?
Well, a lot of sole proprietors and owners of small businesses actually are anti-entrepreneurial. They are telling their kids and their neighbors and their friends, don't do this. This is not fun. A lot of small businesses, they pay less. They have less job security. There's less training. There are fewer benefits. There's less career opportunity. Let's not confuse small business with entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is about growth. It's about the aspiration to be big and to make a difference in your marketplace. It's not about staying small and just owning a little, a restaurant. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. In my book, it's not entrepreneurship. It's something else. It's self-employment. It's small business. There's a small percentage of those small businesses that do break through and grow. And that's because owners have something inside themselves. There's something gnawing at them that this is not enough. They're dissatisfied. They're unhappy with the status quo. And they're the ones who are looking for opportunity.
And the entrepreneur is the one that captures extraordinary value. What makes it extraordinary value as opposed to just capturing value? What is that difference there?
Well, it's first of all, a concept, and it gets a little bit technical, but we all know that there's a so-called risk-free rate of return, and that's sort of what you get by not taking any risk with your money. Today, it's a very, very low number, but the concept of extraordinary is to say that the entrepreneur is not satisfied with a certain but safe return. They're looking for higher returns and that beat the market, so to speak. You can't beat the market by going with the market. To beat the market, you have to go against it.
Hang on just a second, because that brings up another interesting point that I'd like to pursue with you. We're talking with Daniel Eisenberg. He is the author of a new book, Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid: How Contrarian Entrepreneurs Create and Capture Extraordinary Value. And there are some extraordinary stories here as well. We'll continue in just a moment. Money Radio, our guest today, is Daniel Eisenberg. He is the author of Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. Daniel Eisenberg has many years working as an entrepreneur and with entrepreneurs as founding executive director of the Babson Entrepreneurship Ecosystem Project, also taught for many years at Harvard Business School. And you've assembled a lot of case studies over the years, and these have gone into Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid. And as I say, case studies, don't let me mislead anyone. These are really some exciting stories. This is not just dry research. This is some fun stuff, particularly if you have any interest in entrepreneurship. There are some very creative ideas going on, and even when it's not necessarily innovative ideas, there are some unique ways of approaching a situation to capture extraordinary value. And we were just talking about the idea of capturing extraordinary value. Would it be possible then to have corporate entrepreneurship?
Well, it's first of all, I'm old enough to realize that almost anything is possible. But I think that structurally, the corporations mitigate against entrepreneurship because they tend, capturing value means the simple translation of that is making money. And corporations tend not to allow those people who actually create the extraordinary value also to capture it. In fact, one of the things that incenses such a big part of the population about the executive pay is that executives are being paid huge amounts even though they're not creating the value for their own shareholders. And in fact, when you go into the bowels of the organization, teams of people and individual people who really are creating the profits for the company, well, they're not allowed, permitted, or encouraged to capture. How many middle managers get $10 million bonuses? Mm. Very few, and the shareholders would be up in arms if they did. The boards of directors wouldn't allow it. So I think, with exceptions and interesting exceptions, most organizations mitigate against entrepreneurship.
Is there an ecosystem or an environment or a country that would or tends to foster entrepreneurship?
Well, I'm going to go away from the usual suspects, if you don't mind, and go to places such as Dublin, Ireland, for example, or Reykjavik, Iceland, for example, or Tel Aviv, Israel, for example, where you see lots and lots of entrepreneurship bubbling up. And those are only three examples. And it's partly because of the culture. It's partly because of the hardships that they've gone through in the past. It's partly because of the human capital that exists there to try and deal with the adversity that these societies have experienced. So you do see in those settings, you do see unusual amounts of entrepreneurship.
But interesting that so many of the stories that you present in the book, Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid, these are global stories.
That's intentional, Sinclair. And the course that I built at the Harvard Business School was called International Entrepreneurship, and I have lived half of my adult life outside of the United States. So I don't see the United States as the center of the world, and I don't see it as the center of the world of entrepreneurship either. Just because we in America don't see it happening out there in India and in Russia doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It's happening.
It's happening. And interesting as well, one of the things that I kind of took away, and someone else may take away more from the book, but one of the things that might foster some entrepreneurship, and you talked about it somewhat in the book, is adversity. And I guess that maybe goes back to the old idea of necessity is the mother of invention, and perhaps
Absolutely.
Entrepreneurship.
I think so.
This was a fun book to read. As I say, a lot of different stories, a lot of entertaining stories, and well written. Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid by Daniel Eisenberg. Worthless, Impossible, and Stupid by Daniel Eisenberg, our guest today. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you, Sinclair. It was fun.